ago. I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Louisville, Kentucky, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. Yes, LouisvillePolitics.com. We actually keep in touch of everything. I tell you, you know, we've got a lot going on as always. We'll get into a couple of the little local things here in just a minute. But in the meantime, how are you, Mr. Martin?
Well, I'm barely hanging on, Ed.
Barely hanging on.
You know, I see this, something's coming from out of the sky. It's kind of whitish grayish. It's apparent. And it's I'm convinced it's because of the sequester. I think the sky is falling because the sequester is still with us.
Well, I agree with you. I think the sequester.
I'm going to be very, very subdued tonight because I'm scared, to be honest with you.
Well, I don't blame you a bit, man, because the sequester has stopped. Well, Ed, you laugh, but I'm not laughing. The sequester has stopped all the daggone chemtrail planes. It's grounded all the chemtrail planes, so all this stuff that was keeping global warming from happening is now global warming is happening. We've got this nice, fresh, white, cold snow falling down. I don't blame you for being scared, man. Without the chemtrails, the global warming is just going to go crazy on us, dude. And that's where all the cold stuff comes from the warm air, right? Oh, my God. Dude. I tell you what, it is funny. It's hilarious. I love the way you started with that. You know, we've got so many things to talk about. That'll actually probably be part of the show. The sequester, of course, we're going to get into that. But, you know, last night we started on a topic, and you know, I have been deluged today, say the least, with email and phone calls, appreciating the fact that we were willing to go down the road of talking about something. You know, a lot of people are using the term coup d'etat when it comes to what's really going on in America right now. Now, we'll get into some of that in a minute, but there are a couple of local stories I kind of want to hit real quick before we get there. Louisville Zoo, have you been paying attention to the Louisville Zoo story?
Yeah. Well, know, the whole one time I go there every 3 years with one of my kids. Yeah.
Well, it's fascinating because for the first time since the Louisville Zoo opened 44 years ago, they're actually going to start charging to park. The Louisville Zoo has always had free parking. Now they're going to start charging $5 parking fee on top of your zoo admission. So your zoo admission for you guys who live in Louisville is $14.95 per person, unless, of course, you buy a season pass and all that stuff. So it's $14.95 a person to get into the Louisville Zoo. Now they're going to charge a $5 parking fee. Now, you wouldn't think that that would be that big of a deal. And I personally don't see that as being that big of a deal. You know, when you go to the fairgrounds for all these so-called free events, you have to pay to park. So, you know, it really doesn't seem to be that bad until you start looking at the big picture here. And this is where things get a little bit different for me. Quite frankly, the Louisville Zoo is instituting this parking fee, but it's going to be very selective. The Louisville Zoo right now averages about 945,000 visitors each year. They have a firm membership number of about 35,000, and they have about 1,300 parking spaces. So what's going to happen here is they're going to add the fee to park and everything else. You're going to think that's going to create some money for these guys, not much, et cetera. But then when you get into that big picture thing I just talked about, the Louisville Zoo has an annual event here. It's the annual Labor Day picnic. You know, now here's where the contrast comes for me. All these daggone special events and everything else are not going to be exempt. You talk about some of these camps that go to the Louisville Zoo, the YMCA, the Scouts, daycares, other non-school groups. They're all going to be charged this parking fee. You know, at the same time, they're getting charged, of course, their admission fee. What makes this really interesting is that the Labor Day picnic, organized labor members who go to the zoo every year for this event, only pay $5 to get in. It's still open to the public. I can go the same time they can, but I've got to pay $14.95, and they get a discounted rate of $5. Additionally, nobody will tell me, and I've already sent out an email and still awaiting a response, trying to get this from the Louisville Zoo. Nobody will tell me if these guys are exempt from the parking fee. And that's what really gets interesting to me. If they exempt the labor unions from the parking fee, they're already giving these guys a greatly discounted rate to get in the door on their annual Labor Day picnic. If they go so far as exempt these guys from a parking fee, and yet they're charging the YMCA, the Boy Scouts of America, daycare, any camps, children's camps, what does that say about this? I want to know more about this policy before they get me on board. I don't mind paying the parking fee, but I want it to be consistent and I want it to be fair across the board. And if you're going to charge me $14.95 to get in and a parking fee, then I expect the same for the people that come there for their Labor Day picnic. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's fair because, you know, I honestly, like I said, I'll admit it. I don't go to the zoo very often, very, very rarely. So, you know, and like I say, might amount to once a year in a good year. So that's the equivalent of the Labor Day thing. So yeah, what you're telling me is, you know, the one day a year you come, I'm going to get stung for three times as much as a Labor Day get together. And you know, it'd be interesting to see if the unions are, you know, paying some sort of fee up front. You know, sort of a guaranteed cover fee or something, but. Yeah, like, look, you know, it's fine.
Well, essentially.
I get senior citizen discounts. I get little kid discounts. I get some of that. I get organization. If there's an organization and they're bringing a bunch of people, that's fine, too. But like I said, if the Boy Scouts or the YMCA or the Girl Scouts, you know, they need to get the same rate. I understand group rates. I get that. So.
Well, that's interesting to me. So I'm trying to get the answer to that question now. I've been trying all day and haven't had very much success at it. So I guess we'll get there eventually. But it's very interesting to me that this, you know, that they are already creating two different groups of people. You know, if organized labor is qualifying for reduced prices to enter the zoo at $5 a person, which they do for the Labor Day picnic, then they need to have a YMCA day or a Boy Scouts day or a daycare day, whatever. Select a day each year and make that special for those groups as well. Just be fair about it. But if these guys are being exempt from parking fees and I'm going to be charged a parking fee, I find that very, very insulting. You know, labor unions. Now, you remember, folks, I'm not an anti-labor guy. I've been a labor union for a lot of my life. You know, I'm not in one now. Don't ever plan on going back to one. But, you know, at Ford Motor Company, for example, I was making over $27 an hour. I can certainly afford the $5 parking fee, especially since I'm getting basically $10 off my daggone admission price. You know,
yeah,
I can afford
when you
that.
When you think about it, that one of the union's big selling points is they'll tell you, you know, union employee, union labor makes more money than everybody else.
Right.
So, yeah, on top of everything else, they can, hey, you're making more money. It, you know, for, I'll admit, good for you. But it's like, okay, so you've got a class of laborer that's making more money than the average class, you know, the average guy, paid job, perhaps. And you're going to give a discount. I get the group thing, but if we're going to do the group thing, it needs to be consistent, especially with nonprofits.
Well, that's it. Be fair to everybody. And this article is by Sheldon Schaefer out of Courier Journal, where I'm getting a lot of this information from. Not that I have much respect for what Sheldon Schaefer does over there, you know, but he's even got one line in his article where it's the special events parking costs will be handled on an individual event basis, and the cost will be posted on the zoo's website. Now, I perused the zoo's website today, and I certainly couldn't find a special event cost there that would apply to the Labor Day picnic. So I'm kind of curious to see how that was going to work out. I'll be watching that story going forward. As soon as I get an answer on the question.
You know, it is interesting to watch, but the way I look at it, it's like, yeah, so it's, so all things considered, working it out on average, it's going to cost me maybe another $1.50 a year.
Well, I mean, that's
it. Because I just don't go to the zoo that much.
Well, see, but again, that's not the thing for me. I don't mind paying the $5 parking fee, as long as it's fair and it's consistent across the board. If they're going to exempt groups like labor union, organized labor, then they need to exempt groups like the YMCA. They need to exempt groups like, you know, the Boy Scouts of America or the Girl Scouts of America. You know, there has to be fairness here. That's the only problem I've got with the whole situation. I don't mind the parking fee. As a matter of fact, you know, when you go to other places, Cincinnati Zoo, the San Diego Zoo, all these other places around the country that have zoos, I mean, they all charge you parking fees that are greatly more than the $5 that Louisville Zoo wants to open. I mean, in Cincinnati, it's $8. At St. Louis Zoo, it's $15. The Indianapolis Zoo is $10. About the only one that we would compare to dollar for dollar would be Nashville. The Nashville Zoo is $5 parking. So we're just trying to match these guys. So $5 at the bottom line, I mean, that to me, that's really not that a major of a cost that would keep me from going to the zoo. But what would keep me from going to the zoo is supporting an organization that's discriminatory, you know, because you're either a labor union or you're not. Those kind of things are what the answers I want to know, and that's what we're working on now. The another story coming out today, Ed, it actually came out last night, but the Herald Leader, you can go to Kentucky.com for this. Herald Leader is a great place, and I apologize. This story is coming from Bluegrass Politics, not the Herald Leader. But anyway, a bill that would give the subpoena powers. You know, here in Louisville, we have had these ethics cases. I've been behind this whole thing. I'm the one that started this whole show on all these ethics investigations. I used ethics through the KREF and the law in the KREF to get Jim King and Katie King the highest fine in Kentucky history. I filed the charges against Judy Green of Louisville that led to her impeachment. So, you know, all of these things, these ethics charges have finally become a serious enough concern that Frankfurt is getting involved. Now, one of the things we talked about a couple of weeks ago was the idiot Larry Clark, you know, the bought and paid for Larry Clark, you know, decided he was going to put this ethics bill up. And we liked that coming out of the House originally until they amended it to force anybody that brings ethics charges to pay for attorneys that they require you to have. So, you know, that was a problem for me because people aren't going to file ethics charges if it's going to cost them, you know, thousands of dollars out of their pocket to defend them. So that just completely destroys the whole transparent government fix. However, I did like the fact that if you're a sitting Metro Council member and everything else, if Michael Connell's office don't want to do their job and represent you, that you should pay for your own private representation if that's what you chose to do. They have a choice. They've got free legal. Yeah. So that part of it I liked. Well, apparently, Senate Bill 117 on Monday was unanimously approved to the House Local Government Committee. You know, the full bill and everything else has already been approved 35-1. And this bill actually applies to urban county governments. So that would be right here in Jefferson County, like Lexington and Louisville, that kind of a deal. And this would give subpoena powers to the ethics commissions to subpoena people and hold them accountable to testify. That's the one thing that's been missing in all of the ethics investigation is none of these ethics commissions can force anybody or compel anybody to testify. Now, if this thing goes all the way through, now they will have subpoena power, and they'll be able to force these guys to testify. The only problem I've got is on the plaintiff end of this, when you're trying to force a person to spend thousands of dollars because an official is corrupt, but they can't go forward and hold them accountable to it because they don't have the money to defend it. You know what I mean? So we need to watch this bill pretty close as well.
Well, on that one, I think it'd also be nice, you know, they say urban county government. So why not just make it for the whole state?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, set it up to where, you know, they brought up on ethics charges. They don't get to send a bill to anybody unless they want Jack Conway's office to defend them.
Well, and I think that's ultimately the thing. In Jack Conway's office, what Jack Conway does is basically what everybody else does, what Mike O'Connell here in Louisville does and everybody else does. They just basically appoint these special prosecutors or these special defense attorneys. They'll claim there's a conflict of interest or something, so they can't do their job. And that's what costs the taxpayers. In Judy Green's particular case, it cost over, I think it was $115,000. It might have been slightly more than that on that case. But that was total between the plaintiff and the defense attorneys. Now, that's a lot of money. However, in this particular case, I could have presented this case myself. I did not have to have a plaintiff's attorney. I was the plaintiff in the case. I did not have to have a plaintiff's attorney. But their own set of rules and their own regulations force me to take an attorney. When I told them I didn't need one, they forced me to take it anyway. Now, at $150 an hour, and don't get me wrong, anybody that looks up this case versus Judy Green, Springsteen versus Judy Green, or whatever in ethics, you're going to see the attorney was James Earhart. Don't get me wrong. I want to put this on the record. James Earhart is probably one of the most detail-oriented attorneys that I know. This guy does not miss a beat when it comes to the law. I've got all the respect in the world for James Earhart. I would use him on a personal, private level tomorrow. That's how much respect I've got for this guy. And that's saying something. But they forced me to use him, even though I didn't need him or didn't want him, because I was competent enough, knew the law enough. I'm the one who put forth all the facts, and I could have held Judy Green accountable on my own. So their own rules forced us into an attorney that we had to pay for. Now, on the defense side of the equation, every Metro Council member is represented by the county attorney's office. In the event, now we're talking about an ethics commission hearing. In this particular situation, you had two different points going on here. The first thing that happened was the ethics commission and the ethics charges that I filed against Judy Green. Once that commission made their determination that Judy Green should be let go, all right, at that point, then it went to the Metro Council to either impeach her or do whatever they wanted to do to discipline her, okay? At that point, Michael Connell's office could not represent Judy Green because he has to represent the entire council. But the majority of these charges were to outside counsel that Judy Green brought in for her defense in the ethics hearings. That purely, to me, solely falls on the Jefferson County Attorney's Office, who is already getting paid with our tax dollars. So the majority of this money was totally avoidable, and we wouldn't have this situation going forward. The only thing we needed them in Frankfort to do was give subpoena power to the Ethics Commission. Now what they've done is stifle the transparency and stifle the willingness of anybody to get involved. I will continue to file charges. And then when they try to force me to take an attorney, then I'll have to sue to tell them to keep their damn attorney and let them spend even more money to challenge my lawsuit to keep me from stopping them from spending taxpayer money. So all they've done is just created another hornet's nest, Ed. I mean, do you understand that? Does that make sense to you?
Somewhat. In the big picture, it'd just be nice if our elected representatives just didn't do anything that anybody needed to bring them up on charges with. How about it? What a concept, huh?
Oh, yeah, that's very true. And speaking of possible ethics, last night we touched a little bit on a situation involving Councilman Brent Ackerson. We feel like there's something personal involved in this situation going on in his district, trying to stop this Louisville Metro Planning Commission decision that was going to allow a two-story dentist office. The doctor involved in this is named Daniel Byrne. We have sent out feelers. We're trying to get a hold of him as we speak. If we can get a hold of Dr. Byrne, we will certainly give you guys more updates on what's really going on out here. But in the meantime, we're still following that story. Just want to think about to think that we've forgotten about that today. We have not. It's just been tough trying to, you can try to call people, leave messages, send email. I love email because it gives you a date and time stamp so nobody can say they didn't get it. But unfortunately, either people respond or they don't. That's what makes it so hard sometimes to get all the stories straight. In the meantime, Ed, we're going to get right into the conspiracy theory mess we started last night. From the looks of it, this thing is going to continue again tonight, maybe even tomorrow. A lot of people were very, very supportive of what I was saying last night about this government and what their real plans are. And, of course, you had a couple of people who were very, very offended that I would dare challenge our government and a supreme being, the Honorable Allah, Barack Hussein Obama. I don't give a shit what they call him. The bottom line is this. Last night we talked a lot about how the military or the Department of Homeland Security was buying up all the weapon ammunition, particularly 40 cal and 9mm bullets. We also talked about how the Department of Homeland Security was buying up many tanks to use on American soil. Now, one of the things that everybody was saying is, even you challenged me on this, that you didn't think there was any way this was really what the plan was. And I've got to tell you, I've spent some more time.
Well,
today.
I don't think there's. It's not that there's anyway. I just don't happen to think that's what they're doing. I mean,
Fair enough.
Part of me just doesn't want to believe it. So
right.
I can admit that. Yeah.
Well, fair enough, and I'm totally with you on that. Okay, and here's the deal with me. You know, we're having money problems. We're starting to have food problems. The cost of food is going up to a point that people can't buy it, so you're going to start getting into food shortages and everything else. You know, typically when you starve people out, they want to fight back. When people want to fight back, they're usually going to fight back with weapons. That's the way we do it. The Second Amendment was designed to protect us from a tyrannical government. And in many people's eyes, including mine, I believe that's where we're at. We'll get into some numbers on that in just a second. But what's really interesting is when you start doing the research, as I did today, what I have found was, as I said yesterday on the show, that, you know, the government will not have any problems putting the military against American citizens, and that that's where we're headed. Well, the reality is we're already there, and I didn't even know it. I started researching some of this today, and I found a nice, neat little website you guys may want to check out. Very rarely would I promote a website, and believe me, this website isn't for the faint of heart. This is for people who want to look at the truth and make their own decisions based on what these people are saying. But the website is shtfplan.com, or if you will, shithitthefanplan.com. That's how I remember it. I ran into it today, and what I found out was, going through and researching a couple of articles they had and then going to the news, you know, in April of 2010, we talk a lot about Chicago and crime and everything else. In April of 2010, Illinois State Representatives, Chicago Democrats, John Fritchie and LaShawn Ford were calling for the Chicago Mayor Daley in 2010 and Superintendent Jody Weiss to use the National Guard in Chicago to combat crime. And their statement was, and this is their quote, "As we speak, National Guard members are working side by side with our troops to fight a war halfway around the world. The unfortunate reality is that we have another war that's just as deadly taking place right in our backyard. This is a drastic call to action. It is warranted when we are losing residents to gun violence at such an alarming rate without question. We've already lost too many lives. We need action now." So here we go, Ed. We already have an example where we have lost the streets to the criminals right here in Chicago. We have lost the streets to the criminals, and the governor is being asked and begged by sitting representatives who can't seem to do their job and get their funding under control to put enough police officers in the street. They're begging them to put the National Guard on the streets in Chicago. So how far off the mark was I?
Well, those two guys were idiots. To begin with, I mean, like I said, they're just looking for an easy way out. As I say, of politicians all the time, they have no imagination, no innovation. They don't understand cause and effect. All these, you know, it's some in government. You know, I'm not going to deny it. I'm sure there's some in every government, state, local, federal, who would love martial law. You know, put these uppity peasants underfoot. But no, these are just, you've got two idiots. The governor didn't do it. And you've got, come on, look, we got Maxine Waters, you know, and we've got people like that. But there are politicians who say some incredibly stupid and unimaginative things and things that are completely outside the realm of the Bill of Rights just because, you know, they're idiots, you know. They won a popularity contest about all they did. They didn't really earn their way into their office. They haven't proven themselves, and they show it. So, you know, I just dismiss that as two idiots in Chicago government. I mean, hell, they probably even had somebody else buy the election for them, for all we know. It's Chicago.
You would think so, right? Except in May of 2012, less than a year ago, Detroit had the same problem. Detroit, the city of Detroit, was begging the governor to send National Guard troops in to take over the streets because they couldn't control their crime. So, you know, I understand the example from 2 years ago.
They can't control their crime, and now, you know, the horrible truth is Detroit might qualify. You've seen some of the pictures, the aerials and the street levels. The place kind of like a disaster area. So, some of those places look like they could have been hit by a tornado or a wildfire or something. So, yeah, hey, just making bad jokes about Detroit. Sorry.
I know you are. But it makes perfect sense. So what we're saying now, we're saying Chicago.
I'm saying
Detroit.
One more time. When you're talking about Detroit, you're talking about a city that can't pay any of its bills. You're talking about a city that's just absolutely on the rocks. So I think one of the things with Detroit is once again, unimaginative and, dare I say it, an idiot politicians who have, they're out of options. You know, they don't know what to do. So, you know, it's like you're talking now, like the state's going to take over Detroit, maybe. Just because they don't have the money to put the police on the street, which is, you know, kind of a declaration of a disaster area. It's like Detroit in particular, just a basket case. So who knows?
Well, see now you're going down the road I'm talking about. What did you just say? You said there's not enough money to put police on the streets, right? So if we don't have enough money to put police on the streets, then we have to have a right somehow to defend ourselves. They can't get the guns, so they're going after the ammo. We are literally being put in a position that we can't defend ourselves. And I'll tell you how bad this really is. You know, when you look at Chicago and things like that, I mean, it's very, very alarming because here's the reality. According to the economic collapse, there's approximately 1.4 million gang members in America today. That's according to the FBI. It's went up 40% just since 2009. 40% rise in gang membership. And, of course, we're not counting the young men who come into this country illegally from Mexico and everywhere else who don't have any way to legally support themselves. So they come in, they add to the gang population, okay, so they get this feeling of community, like we talked a little bit about last night, okay? And all they have is violence and crime to get what they want. Now, when we look at this, let's look at the reality here. In Chicago, it is illegal to own a handgun for the most part. They banned handguns in 1982, okay? The murder rate in Chicago has soared immensely, and it started immediately after they banned the handguns. Why? Because criminals don't care about that. Approximately 80% of all murders and shootings in Chicago are gang-related. Chicago is now considered to be the deadliest global city. You heard me right. The deadliest global city. And the primary is the gang violence. That's what does it. So here Chicago is wasting all this money, sitting out here trying to daggone take care of these labor unions, and we know that's a reality. We just went through that with teachers. Spending all this money unwisely, and they're not even protecting the streets. We took away your handguns in Chicago. We've taken away all the money to pay for police that are supposed to protect you, but we also know the police aren't protecting you. They have now become the criminal, as much as the criminal is in a lot of cases. So who is there to protect us other than ourselves? See, that's where all of this is going for. This is where I'm going at it. This. In Detroit, it's gotten so bad in Detroit that Detroit police are basically telling everybody to enter Detroit at your own risk because of the gang problem and the crime problem. In 2006, Mexican drug cartels were actively operating, according to the FBI, in 50 different cities. 4 years later, in 2010, that had risen to 1,286 cities. In 4 years, from 50 to over 1,200. Most of these gang members have criminal records, but the overcrowded prisons are throwing these guys back out on the streets. So what do, Ed? When you take the guns, you take the ammo, the government has all the control. They want to put the National Guard in the street because that's what these bad cities are calling for, is putting the military in the streets. So you're going to arm these military guys. Then you go out and you buy 2,700 of these MARP vehicles, these street tanks, if you will, and you throw them in these neighborhoods, and boom, there you have it. We just had the ultimate military coup d'etat. We are no longer a free society. Am I wrong?
You run into the whole disaster area declarations and riot declarations. So, if it happens on a wholesale basis, yeah, you're right. If it happens in isolated incidences in in bureaucracy created disaster areas, isolated, yeah, I can almost see the logic in it in some cases. I mean, there has to be some semblance of law and order. There has to be, in order to protect the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I mean, the government, you want to talk about social contracts and stuff. It's like, look, you wrote the laws. You enforce the laws. And one way or the other, enforce the laws. Now, if they go outside of the law, then that's a whole different thing. But if pathetic as it is, if Detroit or Chicago's police or whatever can't get it done, then maybe you do need to bring in somebody from the outside and just to gain control of the situation again.
Well, it's not just places like Chicago. It's not just places like New York that we're talking about. In East Oakland's Arcadia Park, it has gotten so bad there that the people there have no choice but to police their own streets. They've actually got vigilante police that walk around the streets in Arcadia Park just to make sure that there's no crime. You have to walk around
like
in your house.
Well-regulated militia. Good for them.
Well, there you go. There you go. But guess what? The government's taking your ammo. They're trying to get your guns. So that's going to be down. They're going to be gone. There's nobody there. It's gotten so bad in some parts of the country that the police readily admit that there are places in their cities that they refuse to go because the crime is so bad. To tell you how bad it is in Chicago, we've been talking about them a little bit. And in order for them to save money and try to send what little limited resource police officers they had to more critical areas, they have literally stopped taking 911 calls. Literally stopped taking 911 calls for armed robberies, car thefts, and burglaries. Now, we've got to look at this. Where does this stop? And they're screaming that they want the National Guard to come in. Ed, I don't see an instance where a National Guard should be a legitimate presence on the streets of America. I see that as third world country serious problems. We are screwing ourselves in America when we start going down this path. There's no doubt about it in my mind. So how do we get America back? Why can't we pay for police officers? Because of the garbage that these politicians are doing to us. You know, when you look at the reality, I mean, let's look at some of the things that are going on financially. We've been talking about the sequester. They're screaming over 2.2%. All right? What they're not telling you is, okay, you know, they're talking to Mayor Michael Bloomberg. You know who he is, right?
Oh, yeah, this 20-ounce Coke himself.
Right. This guy is such a brick. Last month in February, he actually was out and he was being interviewed. And, you know, he told the whole world that the federal deficit does need to be curtailed. But then he made the argument that the U.S. could owe an infinite amount of money and there is no specific amount that would cause the country to default. Bloomberg went on to say that we're spending money we don't have, which is true. But then he goes on to say that the U.S. federal government, you know, there are so many people out there willing to lend us an infinite amount of money. There's no limit on it. And our debt's so big that, you know, people just don't worry about giving us money. You know, it's like when you're a small business, Ed, you know this personally. If you want to borrow $5,000 from the bank, you got a problem. But if you want to borrow $5 million from the bank, it's no problem. You know what I mean? And that's the reality.
I don't know about that. I mean, if you're a big enough company, yeah. I mean, it's just like when they waltz into town and talk about how many jobs they're going to give. Yeah, they can't give them tax cuts fast enough. But to a degree, speaking in finance, he is right to a degree. The country will, our currency is strong enough. Our economy and consumption are strong enough. Our assets are enough. That we won't default on our debt. Our money won't be worthless, but it will lose value. And if the reason it won't be worthless, just like everybody else's money. Well, everybody's always gonna, you're right. The Chinese will buy dollars from us for yen, or renminbi or whatever, and they're gonna print it too. So ultimately. Yeah, the intrinsic value of money is going to decrease, but it won't become zero because it is an accepted means of transacting or stuff. But yeah,
for now.
But, But your $20 bill might not buy an apple from my orchard. You know?
Well, there you go. I tell you, it's totally mind-boggling to me. We're going to get into some of the real serious issues on this and talk about how much money we're really losing. But we're going to take a break first. We've got to get a break in, folks. We'll be right back. You're listening to the MVM Radio Network, the Ed Springer Show. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springer of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising.
Everybody, gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why.
Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government.
TimHawkins.net. You can go to TimHawkins.net. It's by comedian Tim Hawkins, I should say. And, you know, I play this song every show because it just makes all the sense in the world. Going into break, Ed, we're talking about what's really going on, the crime problems, the government trying to take over the streets. We just had a drone sighting just the other day at JFK Airport. Commercial planes were taking off and landing, and they were reporting a drone was flying in their flight path. So, you know, they had no choice but to do what they had to do to avoid any kind of collisions. But, you know, so this is the thing. We've already got drones up in American Airways watching everybody, you know, so we're all already considered a criminal no matter what we do, whether we are or we aren't. We've got a government taking all our daggone ammo, buying up all the ammo so we can't get it, so our guns become worthless. We've got bankers who took our bailout money and decided they wanted to start getting in a commodities game. That's why your food prices are going up. That's why you're paying more for less on your food prices, folks, is, you know, at one time they were involved about 10%. Now they're about 40% involved in all the commodities trading. So now we've got the government and their bankers who use our money. Okay, so they're controlling our food. We've got an economy that, in my opinion, is worse than it was in the Great Depression, although I wasn't around then. We need proof of that. Michael Bloomberg was talking about how we can owe an infinite amount of money, and there's no amount that would cause a country to default because too many people, we owe too many people too much money that they're scared to let us go in default. When we look at what's really happened here in 2013, personal income decreased $505.5 billion, or 3.6%, in January. Disposable personal income decreased $491.4 billion, or 4% in January. Now, this, you know, the savings rate collapsed to 2.4% from 6.4% in December. And that's the word you got to use. You got to use collapse. That's a 62% decline from December to January. Now, in all honesty, that sounds like it's just doomsday. It really does. But one thing that this particular writer didn't bother using in this equation that I would, you know, is that December is what? Christmas, right? So
yeah.
People are going to spend money that they wouldn't normally spend out buying all the Christmas gifts for everybody and all the other things that they do. Of course, that's going to decrease your personal savings, all right? But the personal income decrease, that's not what you're actually spending. The personal income decrease is 3.6%. So I would say the decline month over month, when you add in the Christmas spending that's not going to be done in January and everything else, when you put it all together, you're not really looking at an actual 62% decline. But I certainly wouldn't have any problem seeing that as being 50% or above. You're the financial guru, man. Talk to me.
Well, you know, I've been reading on the savings rates and everything. And the fact of the matter is the low interest rates, they goose the economy for a while, and a lot of it's boosted by what's called the wealth effect. And that's what they try. You know, they get a temporary bump. You know, 0% financing, your houses may go up in value, you know, or anything like that. They're just trying to goose the economy. Now, sometimes it works. Sometimes, you know, the 0% financing on cars and the no down payment and the whatever, the real low single digits on houses does give a temporary boost, but now we're all back to, you know, reality setting back in to where people would spend money and think, oh, well, it's going to turn around. You know, they listen to the mainstream media. Oh, we're in a turnaround. We're going to spend some money. Now they've done that, and the economy hasn't turned around, and we're finding out that, you know, a lot of the debt is beginning to get a little older. They're starting to factor in more and more the student loan thing, and you start looking at the fact that college grads can't get jobs and things like that. And now when you talk about credit and stuff, now they can't get credit because they've got outstanding student loans that they can't pay off because they can't get a job outside of a part-time job. So it's all just starting to well up, and this is what always concerns me the most. It's actually when I performed my little miracle move and got out of the market before the last collapse. Is this economy, and always remember, this economy is 70% consumption, consumer spending. That's what it is. So when you see numbers like this, you just bear in mind that weighs on 70. You know, back in the day, we might have been much more into manufacturing as opposed to consumption, you know, and production and things like that. But now it's just pure consumption. Doesn't matter where it comes from, but, you know, most of the transactions in our economy involve people buying stuff, not building stuff, not buying stuff to investing in a machine or anything like that. They're just buying consumables.
Because now
we're on shaky ground. When that consumer doesn't get so he's not so juiced up, remember, that puts 70% of your economy at risk.
Well, and that's exactly one of the things I want to put up, because you just mentioned it. 70% of our economy is based on consumer spending and consumption. Okay, so when we look at this, if we look at personal income, if we've got a decrease from month to month of somewhere around 50% on personal, you know, income and spending and things like that. We've got a serious, serious problem here. You know, as Mike Snyder over at Economic Class points out, you know, most Americans are living from paycheck to paycheck. You know, they've got, they're seeing rising prices and everything. You know, gas, food, taxes, your paychecks are smaller. We just had new taxes instituted. You know, that's not counting the cost of Obamacare that's getting ready to hit a lot of people. Everybody has had to cut back on unnecessary expenses. You know, many of these families no longer have any discretionary income. I mean, we're riding the border myself. It takes a hell of a lot to keep this show going. I don't have discretionary income. All right. So I'm one of those people that's suffering every day, too. You know, 24% of all Americans have more credit card debt than money in the bank. And what's really interesting here is, you know, we've already had all this going on. The gas and food prices, more taxes, foreclosures, job losses, and the government keeps saying we're going to spend more money and put these emergency safety nets in place. And these safety nets don't mean anything. The HAMP program was a great example of that when it came to the foreclosures, how they were going to fix that problem. You know, and what's really interesting here is because the writing's on the wall that we're going to have another serious financial and economic collapse in the very near future. This isn't something we're talking about a year or two from now. We're going to have it happen now. Sometime this year, I firmly believe that. And you need proof of that? While the whole country is going to crap and nobody has any money, the Dow Jones just set a new record. So think about that for a minute. Because
yeah,
these investors are going
that.
Out there. Yeah, they're going out there, jacking everything up, getting what they can. And then when it drops, they're going to get their money on the front end and let nature take its course on the back end. This is the same thing we did that led into the last one. We haven't done anything different. And then when you look at people like Michael Bloomberg up in New York and everything else, and his big, you know, way of making this, you know, better is infinite borrowing. Michael Bloomberg is the mayor of New York, people. He's got one of the biggest voices of all the politicians in the entire country. People look to New York. I'm sorry, I don't know why, but they do. You've got Michael Bloomberg, who has all this money. He's loaded. Okay, and he's out there saying, it don't matter, we'll just keep borrowing because nobody's going to shut us down anyway. That's why they kicked the can down the road, so that when cities like Detroit go broke or Chicago can't do their job, they just go out and bring the National Guard in, and they go ahead and use your money to pay military guys to shut you down. That's how it works. That's why I'm concerned.
That's how it can work, yeah, in the worst cases. You know, and along with Bloomberg's talking about, you know, how we can get away with borrowing money and this, that, and the other, and the sequester, mm-hmm. and all the things that are happening, you know, it goes back to what I've said in the past, and it's something to consider, is that, you know, this government, look at the spasm they're having over 2%, a 2% cut in growth and spending. They've always said, you know, I know your son's always like, let's get them, and I'm like, no, it's going to be a passive. I think, you know, I was thinking about it today. There's another thing that maybe the government doesn't want us to realize with sequester. You see what happens when they get 2% of their goodies yanked from them. What happens if the American public just went off the grid for 2-5% of their transactions, skid mm-hmm. cash transactions? You know, wink, wink, nod, nod. Look at somebody, they're the cash discount on this, right?
Right.
Took stuff off the grid. I mean, I've always said that's the thing. It's a house of cards. The economy is a house of cards. The government is a house of cards. And it really, because of the leverage, because of the, you know, the so thin on the margins, there's no surpluses anybody's working with in government or anything. It can be brought down with ease. I've said a long time, the young people are just going to go off the grid. They're going to say, screw you, we're not going to pay the taxes. So, you know,
a lot of them already are.
Bloomberg's right to a degree, but he's, you know, again, I don't know what happened to him. He was a smart guy before he got in, and he just started doing stupid things. And, you know, maybe he's looking around, seeing he's surrounded by stupid people and thinks he needs to micromanage it. I don't know. But, yeah, I can't figure the guy out. Detroit, just a basket case. You know, so who knows? When it comes to the taking over the cities, I hope you're wrong, but And then on top of everything else, it all gets back to jobs, where our government has been up there pissing and moaning, fighting the right, fighting the left, and Democrats, Republicans, and they're doing all this, and they've done nothing to help jobs.
Which is really fascinating, too, because now they want to...
Why is Detroit broke? Jobs. wire criminals, like you said, whether they're Mexican gangs here in Kentucky or Philadelphia or Chicago or whatever, why are they doing what they're doing? No jobs. Because hustling drugs, you know, is a job. It's the only job they've got.
And it gets worse.
Yeah.
It gets worse. Now they're talking about trying to raise minimum wage once again, and they're trying to get it up to around $10.15. So you don't have jobs now because there's no employers out there, okay? You know, even your service economy jobs. I mean, you know, if you're watching these jobs, let's look at Darden restaurants and the Olive Gardens and all that. They're cutting all their employees down to less than a minimum wage to force them to make more money. So what the government says is if we don't have jobs, we don't have as much revenue as we're used to wanting to get. Now, understand this, folks. Very important such situation here. You have to pay attention to. Our government is set to set historic levels of revenue this year. Historic levels of revenue. They're getting plenty of money. They're going to set historic levels of revenue. Okay? When you look at that, what they're pissed off about and what they're frustrated about, what this $85 billion is all about, which is a joke in and of itself, this is about nothing more than they're getting more money in, but they're not getting the percentage of money they want. So if they're used to bringing in, let's say, 3%, and they're only getting 2%, even though that 3% represents more money than they've ever had, or that 2% represents more money than they've ever had, they're not satisfied because they've already spent money based on 3% and they screwed up. They're spending money they don't have in advance, and when things don't work out, then we're all up shit creek without a paddle. That's exactly where we're at. And this is what I'm telling you. This is the problem because, you know, when you take minimum wage to $10.15, you're going to cost more jobs. More people are going to be out of work.
Oh, yeah.
But what's going to happen? The guy that owns that gas station is now going to raise prices to pay for the person that he has to have manning that cash register that takes your money. So he's still going to have jobs. He may have one or two less jobs or just works people a little bit more or whatever, or he brings in a couple of part-timers because he no longer has to worry about medical benefits. But they're going to raise the price of these gas, the price of a gallon of gas. The majority cost in a gallon of gas here in Kentucky, folks, is taxes. It's not the cost of the gas that's killing you. It's the taxes. Now, if you're one of those people who still has a job, you're still going to have gas. The employer that's going to have a few jobs left isn't going to lose money on that gas. So he's going to raise the prices of that gas so his employees are going to get the $10.15 they want. The price of that gas is now, since it's got a higher price, it's got higher taxes. Don't let anybody fool you on that because you're going to raise the taxes to compensate as well, which is another increase. So the people who don't have anything are going to get further behind. That's just one example. Let's look at food cost. Let's look at food cost. Food costs are already starting to go through the window. You're not going to be able to afford to eat in 2 years. I promise you that. The majority of Americans aren't going to be able to afford to eat in 2 years. And I tell you how I know that. Because more than 50% of the people in this country are now dependent on government programs in one form or another. And the majority of that is food stamps. They can't afford to eat now. So then the government has to make up the money on these emergency safety nets that they keep throwing down your all's throat. They have to make up the money. So they raise the minimum wage, which is going to get them a little bit more money on payroll taxes. They raise the minimum wage. They're going to get more federal taxes. They're going to get more FICA for Social Security and everything else. They're going to have less jobs, but they're going to make the same amount of money. But then they're going to go through, they're going to take that money, tell the whole world that they've got to have this situation. We've got to give you more food stamps so you can eat. Poor you are going through hard times. And then they're going to have to go out and borrow more money that they're going to abuse, and they're going to be right back to screaming and hollering about the $85 billion next year. Ed, where does it stop?
Well, it doesn't stop. I've always said to people, whether you want to look at it as a negative or a positive feedback loop, we're in a flat spin right now. We are, you know, we've done everything. And when you talk about jobs and stuff, it's like, yeah, that sounds pretty good to people because, you know, you start doing the benefits that once you get a full complement of benefits from the government, employers can't really compete too well with it because it is an impressive benefits package sometimes, you know, to pay somebody X amount of dollars for doing nothing, you know, and then it's like, oh, well, you mean I got to work 30 to get this much? But, you know, you're right. That's why when you talk conspiracy theory, a lot of times I'm pretty quick to say, no, I think they're just idiots. And it's sometimes hard to believe that the same guys that could probably hatch a coup, they can't figure out, you know, that raising a minimum wage to that amount is going to cost jobs. It's going to increase automation. It's like your gas station analogy. It's going to make the guy look and says, okay, what hours of the day do we sell most gas? Okay, fine. Those are the only hours I'm open because, by God, when I'm paying somebody $10 an hour to rent a gas register, they're going to ring it a lot. You know, and your 24-hour gas stations are going to close. And there'll be 10-hour gas stations. So, and it's just, it all gets back to this. You run into problems with is government too big or too small to fix the problem? Is corporate America too big or too small to fix the problem? In a lot of cases, they're too big. They're too out of touch. It's just like when you see, you know, they're going to fund the banks, they're going to fund GM, they're going to support the big companies. But again, small business employs 70% of the people. Yeah, they're not doing anything, you know, that's, as they say, you know, why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is. Well, they need to figure out a way to prop up small businesses because that's where the jobs are created. These are the people who don't outsource. These are, you know, let's face it, downtown Chicago, you're not going to be able to put a bunch of big employers in because it's already built up. But you know what? You can fill the place up with small entrepreneurs and shops and whatever. But the government doesn't do that because, well, they're just not real bright. Hey, where'd you go, Ann?
Ed, you there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Did I lose you?
I don't know if you lost me or you fell off, but I went dead there for a bit, so I just quickly redialed. So.
Well, there we go. Okay. It might have been here. I don't know, but there we go. See, we're talking conspiracy. I'm putting this stuff out, and all of a sudden, it disappeared from the air. You know what I mean?
That's what I was thinking.
That happens. Yeah.
I'm glad I wouldn't have gone the over 100. I'd have thought they'd have cut you off sooner than that.
Well, you know, they waited a while. All right. Well, we're at the end of the show, and we've just got a couple minutes left. Final thoughts, my friend.
Well, hey, you know, it's like I say in business, you trust no one. You got to verify. Listen, is the government looking, are they masterminds for a coup, or are they just raging idiots? Well, it doesn't really matter, does it? They're not doing the job we elected them to. They're, you know, the simplest of tasks. The solutions don't work. Yeah, you know, just as I always say, people just got to be cynical. And if it comes down to it, if Ed and his conspiracy theories are right, you know, there's really, I would tell people that the best thing you can do going forward is just get to know your neighbors. Depend on, you know, families and neighbors, and depend on yourself, because I happen to be of the school of thought that the government is chock full of idiots. It's chock full of people that. They can't see your picture. They can't see the small picture. They can't see the working man's picture. And all they see is this big picture, this big clumsy government that can't get anything right. So, you know what? People are going to have to, right or wrong, I still think it's a damn good idea. Whether, you know, whether there's a conspiracy out there for that Ed speaks of or not, I think people need to become more self-reliant. They need to become more reliant on their families. They need to live within their means because your government's not going to do it, so even though it's Ed's favorite song, you know, the government can. The government can't. The government is failing miserably, and it's going to start failing. It's going to get progressively worse in their failure. So whatever you do, don't depend on them.
Well, and that's exactly it. And if you listen to the song, the government can, it says the government takes everything you make to satisfy all of their solutions. The problem is they never have a solution. The government creates problems. They don't solve anything. Now, you know, me and Ed will disagree on different things. Ed seems to think that it's just a bunch of stupid people. I seem to think that it's an orchestrated effort to take us over. That's just the nature of the beast. And I apologize if people find that to be a conspiracy theory, but all you need to do is look at what's really going on here. I mean, it's amazing. If you guys really want to do some serious research, and every one of you guys can research, because you've got internet or you wouldn't be listening to this show right now. If you want to do some serious research, start doing the background checks on a coup d'etat. Start looking at the situation with JFK and get beyond the Warren Commission report and start looking at the things that were going on. And you're going to see similarities in the way of things we're doing things now. You're going to see things being done for what they want the outcome to be, not because it's the right thing to do. When you look at history, go back to Nazi Germany, look at Austria, look at all of the things there, and realize that we, in effect, have the same problem here. Politically, a coup d'etat is basically described as, you know, nothing more than political engineering. It affects who rules in the government. That's what your political coup d'etat is. In a bloodless coup d'etat, which is what I think we're under right now, the threat of violence suffices to keep us in control and to keep us in check. We're scared of violence. We are. 911 has been used repeatedly for the last 12 years as an excuse to build up something called the Department of Homeland Security, whose only mission, it appears to be, is to harass, intimidate, threaten, and coerce American citizens into subservience to the government. That's all the Department of Homeland Security does, folks. Think about it. The TSA, how many more reports do we have from the TSA harassing and violating people on a personal level, stealing your contents? There's all kinds of reports out there about that. The TSA not doing background checks and hiring criminals who are stealing your stuff. A private employer would never get away with one-tenth of what this federal government does. And we elect these clowns. So maybe the real stupid people aren't the ones that are elected. Maybe the real stupid people are the ones we see every day in the mirror when we get out of bed. Because we elect the clowns to do this to us. You think I'm lying? Look up the definition of a dictatorship. If coup d'etat is too big for you, look up the definition of dictatorship. Our government is now basically getting down to the point where it's ruled by an individual, not an elected representative body. Look at executive orders if you want proof of that. That's a dictator, folks. This isn't America, land of the free, home of the brave any longer. This is America where the powerful elite are going to take what the hell they want, and they don't care about your suffering. It's time to take America back. It's time to stand tall, be proud, say, I'm an American, and this is not acceptable. People will only give you what you're willing to accept. The real only question that really remains today is, how much more are you willing to accept? That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, Dale the Truth will be here at 7 o'clock as usual. Don't forget our Thursday night lineup, the TNT Thursday Night Truth Show. And Sunday night at 7 with our good friend Mr. Ken Molman with Liberty Unbridled. Mr. Martin, thank you so much. We'll see you next week,
yes,
of course.
Sir.
All right, I appreciate it. Yeah, well, yeah, if we're both still around, yeah. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. And for you guys who have been listening, we appreciate you being here. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, same time, same channel. Thank you so much. Have a great night.